Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Today is Thursday, November 17th, and this is season 3, episode 14 of our podcast. As usual, we have a lot to cover. We're going to start out by talking really what happened between the last podcast, which was on October 28th, till now. Even though it's just a short period of time, but a lot has happened to the market, and we're going to cover that. We're also going to talk about some important economic indicator dates that we're going to be looking, that we look at to try and make sense out of this market. And then the election, we actually have an election. So we'll talk about the effect of that or on the markets as well. Federal Reserve expectations. We're going to talk about some things we are doing in the portfolios right now to take into account what is happening. And then some year-end things that you should be doing now between now, obviously, and the end of the year, and then some client questions. So we have a lot to cover. So let's just get started. Dryden, you know, I just mentioned that it's only been, 18 days since the last, let's say 20 days since the last podcast, but a lot has happened, a lot of it because we've had an election, we've had a CPI number, a PPI number, a lot of numbers that have come in and surprised the street. And so can you recap what has happened and what things should we be looking at now?
Sure. Well, since the last podcast, the S&P 500 is up 1.39% or 1.3%. And so the good news is things may be looking a little more positive than they have in the past, but I think I want to recap in the same frame and context that we've been talking about for the last 9 months. And that's those big things we've been talking about for the last 9 months, the invasion, inflation, interest rates, and the election. So with regard to the invasion, you know, remember, everybody thought this thing was going to be over in a couple of days. We're 9 months into this. We've had a major offensive by the Russians. The Ukrainians stopped them. Now we have a counteroffensive by the Ukrainians. I've said several times before, things will begin to change when you see things change in Kherson and Severodonetsk. We've seen the Ukrainians kind of get right up to around Severodonetsk. We've seen now the Russians have pulled out of Kherson. There's still a lot of missile attacks and things like that, but the situation on the ground still continues to go poorly for the Russian Federation. We're getting into winter, and this thing is kind of grinding. So unless there's a big offensive fairly soon to really push the Russians around within the next 30 to 45 days, things are going to kind of, you know, grind a little bit to a halt. There could be a chance for the Ukrainians in the middle of the winter to do a heavy armored attack, combined arms. They are able to pull that off more than the Russians are, probably unlikely. So I think we get to this situation where unless something happens fairly quickly to dramatically change things on the ground, we're looking at this moment of the next big changes coming in the spring or summer. So remember, we talked about how different it is in geopolitical thing, and we're looking for that moment of peace. Well, that hadn't happened yet. But certainly for the Ukrainians, it's much better. And certainly from a political standpoint, the United States is continuing to offer significant support to the Ukrainian military, along with our NATO allies. The other thing that people are just now beginning to realize is the circumstance in the Ukraine has probably helped to de-escalate some of the concerns around China, Taiwan. Okay, we really got some high drama around there. We were really having some high rhetoric around China, Taiwan that was concerning everybody. It was concerning the chip market. It was concerning all of those things. And I think that the Russians, it's a cautionary tale for Xi, what's happened to the Russians with their invasion of Ukraine. So it looks like now, after Biden and Xi have talked, there's a little bit of a de-escalation in the circumstances around Taiwan, and that's helpful. But we're not having peace, love, and understanding break out all over the world. We're still in this situation where there is an ongoing war, and that is going to continue to elevate oil prices. It's going to continue to elevate commodity prices. It's going to continue to create these moments of volatility in the markets. You know, you had this one missile show up in Poland, which was clearly a mistake by somebody, but it rallied, it rattled the markets for a little while. So that's the whole nutshell of the Ukraine. Peace is not going to break out anytime soon, but I think we can look forward to circumstances probably by midsummer having changed dramatically from here. And that's important. Now, let's go to inflation. Remember, we talked about inflation and what you wanted to look for. When would it be better? Was when you began to hear the word peak. Well, it looks like. Now, I want you to please remember, one number does not make a trend, okay? One good number does not make a trend. It takes 2 or 3 months of numbers where you can really understand the trend, because there's all sorts of technical reasons why a number may overestimate or underestimate medical costs, underestimate used cars and trucks. These numbers have a lot of embedded things that you can get a false read on them. But it does look like that June was when headline peaked. Headline inflation peaked at about 9.1 in June, and now it's down to about 7.7. That's significant progress. The thing we've been wanting people to pay close attention to is core. Now, it looks like core probably peaked in September, because the September was 6.6, October was 6.3. Again, 1 month does not make a trend. However, we're going to get new data coming out middle of the month, and Layla's going to cover those details. So that's important. So now we have inflation. So let's move on to interest rates. We had a 75 basis point rise in November. The world is waiting. The world is waiting for what do they do in December. We get another inflation read on the 13th of December. We have another Fed decision on the 14th of December. I can tell you that it's probably going to be the most anticipated and monumental Fed decision that we've had in a while, because the question will be, is it 75 basis points? Is it 50 basis points? Is it signaling something of a change? Is it moving towards what we call the pause? Remember, 50 basis points rise is still a rise in interest rates, right? It's just at a slower pace. But we've talked about this, and at the moment you see the current interest rate rise less than the previous one, that's indicative of a moment when the Fed would pause. That, we think, will probably be positive for the markets, because we'll be ending the part of the cycle. Why is this important? I want to remind everybody of this. Companies cannot, nor can households, cannot manage their future and their planning unless they know their capital cost. And companies don't know how much capital is going to cost them until this rising cycle is over. Households can't know what their real mortgage rate is going to be if they have an adjustable rate mortgage, or their credit card rates, or any of those other things, until we begin to get some certainty here. So all this uncertainty begins to unwind, and we'll come back to this in a little bit as to when we think things will clean up. But, and then the last piece of this was the election. And I've been saying the only date we knew for sure was November the 8th. Of course, now we're, you know, in November 17th, and it's still not over in some places, but for the big decision, the most important thing about this election is it's over. And so now you have that moment where the Republicans have a razor-thin majority in the House of Representatives, and you have divided government. That is significant. Layla will come back and talk about what all that means. But those are the big four things. 4 months ago, 3 months ago, and 2 months ago, for each of those four things, I could not tell you how close we were to those key moments of peace or peak or pause or when the election was. Now I can tell you the election is over. We sort of think there's a pathway for knowing when things will settle down in Ukraine. We definitely know that we're looking at data that's beginning to talk about peak in interest rates. And we're, you know, within a month of a moment when we're going to understand the trajectory of pause. Those are very significant.
You mean peak in inflation, that is.
Peak in inflation and pause in interest rates.
Right.
So that's very different. We're getting a lot closer to the moment where at least we'll have some clarity.
Is really important, because That's where everybody wants to know when the pain is going to stop. When is it going to get better? You know, and so we are constantly looking at data, and there's constantly data coming out that gives us an idea of what is going to happen. And whenever the market gets surprised by this data, whether on the upside or whether on the downside, if you remember, it happened in June, it happened in September, where we thought CPI would actually go down, and it went up. So in November, people didn't have a lot of expectation of CPI. They thought it might stay the same or even go up, and a surprise on the downside, it actually CPI went down, and this is when we had that nice market rally that we've been enjoying the last couple of weeks after that. So the next number, like Dryden said, that we really look at is the CPI number, which is going to be on December 13th, and then the Fed meets on December 14th, and then we have a podcast on December 15th. So the Fed has always said one number is not enough, two numbers, they need two numbers. So if we get a second number in December 13th, then it's likelihood that they will not raise interest rates by 75, they'll raise it by 50, which would be a pretty good welcome. We may have what we call a 10 o'clock rally, because we find it, even though the market right now is anticipating the 50 basis point, but when it actually happens, I think it will have an effect on that. So that's one date we're really looking at. The date before that is PPI, is 12.9 on December 9th. But another date, even just at the end of the month, which is November 30th, is the what we call the JOLTS, which is job opening, because the Federal Reserve wants to see less job openings, because if there's so much job openings, that means we're still going to have wage inflation. They would like to see unemployment go up into the 4%. It has gone up from 3.5 to 3.7, but still a long ways from their target. So the unemployment rate, that data is December 2nd, when we see the unemployment rate, whether it actually continues to go up. Well, people are asking me, well, there's been a lot of layoffs, you know, in the tech companies and so forth. But remember, when they do these layoffs, they still give them some sort of severs. So they're not going to show up in the unemployment number until several months. This is why everything that's happening now is a lagging indicator. Everything happens a little later. You know, you think you have an effect. You see all these layoffs. I know Amazon just said they're going to lay off some more next month. And you know, a lot of companies are starting to do layoffs, but it's not going to show up because they have severance pay and they still have money. They're not going to be filing for unemployment for several more months until they are actually off the payroll. And so the job openings, if we see less job openings on November 30th, we can actually see a little nice rally. I know last time that happened, we had 1.1 million less job openings, and that really drove the markets. We think that number should decrease. You know, companies are realizing that we might go into a little recession, and they're certainly either freezing hiring or stop hiring or doing layoffs, which is what we need to bring down inflation. Because everything we have right now, all our problems in the market, in the economy and so forth, is that we have this high inflation, and the Federal Reserve needs to bring that down because that affects everything.
I think that it's very important, Layla, you introduced the concept of time. And I really think it's important for everybody to recognize the Fed can change policy in a day. The markets can price policy changes in a minute, but businesses and consumers cannot react that fast. It takes 6 months for household budgets to adjust. You don't really always know how much this higher interest rate or these costs of inflation are going to affect you. Now, if you want to know the psyche of a consumer, what you need to look at is interest rates and gasoline prices, right? Those are the two most recognized prices in the country. But those things can change pretty quick, right? But everything else takes a little while. And so it's important to recognize that the reaction that you're seeing in the market today is really a reaction created by interest rates that were raised in March, April, and May. And so we haven't even seen the effect, the net effect of a 75 basis point interest rate increase now, and we've had four of those in a row. So I think that it's very important for us to think about what does the Federal Reserve want to have happen. They want the economy to slow down. Are they getting what they want? The aspects are, well, not quite so much. That's why they keep raising. But the point of the matter is consumers take a while to catch up to the policymakers' desires. And we're just now beginning to see the effects of the rate increases that we had 6 months ago. So that's very important, and why every data point is important going forward. It just takes some time, and that's also why it gets significant on this concept of pause.
Right. And the fact is, bad news in the economy is good news for the market. That's what's hard for people to understand. When there's layoffs, market goes up. When unemployment goes up, the market goes up, right? You would think if you have people out of work, but that is good because it fights inflation. So whenever you see bad, when you see good news in the economy, it's counter to them, and they basically affect the market the opposite way. Talk about that, Brian.
It breaks down like this. Very simple. What's causing the stock market to go down, or has caused the stock market to go down, was the increase in interest rates. The Fed will quit raising interest rates when they see inflation coming down. The indication that inflation can go down is going to be weakness in the economy. They want some weakness in the economy because it was too strong. And it's taking a while for that to occur. Why? Because balance sheets were great. We've got a $1.7 trillion worth of excess money. We still have more jobs than we have people. You know, if you think about, if labor force participation rate just got back to what it was pre-pandemic, we would have like, you know, 2 or 2.5 million more people working, making more money. It would be adding $198 billion in additional income to our economy. It'd be like adding the entire country of Hungary and slapping it down in the middle of Ohio. So the point is our economy has this great potential and demand for jobs. It's still growing. It's still growing in an environment where the Fed is kind of wanting to slow it down. So we're at that moment where somewhere between now and March, all of these interest rate hikes are going to begin to show up. It's going to begin to create this slowdown in the economy. I've said it 1,000 times. You're driving a car at 90 miles an hour. You slow down to 50. You feel like you're at a dead stop, but you're still moving 5 times faster than you can walk, right? Or 10 times faster than you can walk. So the point is that it's going to feel like we're having a recession. We'll probably have a small recession. We're in the small R camp. And I think we'll probably be coming out of it before we actually feel like we're in it. But this is what's going to have to happen to ameliorate this inflation pressure that we're having.
And the thing to remember is the market looks 12 months in advance. Why did the market go up so much when CPI number just went down to 7.7? Inflation is still 7.7. It's still pretty high. Because they look at 12 months from now, the trend is lower. And once inflation starts going down, it should start going down pretty quickly. At least that's historical. So they look at 12 months from now, they figure by 12 months from now, Federal Reserve should pause or actually stop raising interest rates, and inflation should be on its way down, because that's what the Fed is trying to do, and that's what the market basically looks at and sees with a better CPI number. That's why we need 2 CPI numbers, or more than 2. We need a trend. We need that trend to continue to see relief from the high interest
rates. But I want to make something really, really clear. As we've looked at all this data, what we see going on in 2023 is not a pivot in interest rates, okay? If the Fed does a pivot where they're lowering interest rates, that's probably a bad sign. That means they've done it too much. So we think that they're going to get to this moment where we do 50, then maybe another 50, then maybe a 50 or 25, 25, 25, something like that. And somewhere around 5 to 5.25 on the federal funds rate, they're going to go, let's breathe. Let's let the consumer catch up. We're probably at restrictive policy determinations, and let's let everything catch up. And we think that that's probably going to continue on throughout the rest of 2023. Folks, that's not bad news. Okay, it because when you reach that moment where you've got some stabilization, households and businesses can adapt and they can plan. Look, when you look at earnings, right, 473 out of the S&P 500 companies have finally reported 58% beat on sales, 69% beat on earnings. Economic fundamentals are still pretty good. You're going to see some adjustments as we get into next year because, you know, you're going to see some slowdown. You're going to see some earnings adjustments and revisions, but the fundamentals are still pretty decent. So we're moving into a moment where the stock market is going to continue to be volatile. It's not all rosy, right?
No.
You're going to have a lot of things that are data dependent, but we continue to see what we think some fairly robust signs of continued strength in the economy as it adjusts to what we think. Yes, is there going to be a recession? Yes. Is it going to be small? That's what we think. Because this transition we're going through will probably sometime at the first quarter, we'll find ourselves at what the moment where the Fed is no longer.
But remember that bad news for the economy, which is what a recession is, may actually be good news for the market. So we'll have to see how that plays out next year. Now, Drennan, let's go back to the election for a little bit. I know we have a divided government right now. What does that mean for the market and what is historically the market's done after such a occasion?
So this is what's very interesting, and we've said this before, is the market usually goes up around 8% between November, the November election and the end of the year during a midterm election cycle. During a midterm election, that doesn't mean, doesn't matter whether it's Republicans or Democrats, doesn't matter divided government or not, just that the fact it's over, the market now begins to go up. So we begin to see that catalyst working its way through ever since November the 8th. That's between now and the end of the year. What does this mean for next year? Well, for years where you have a divided government, which we actually do now, you tend to see the market go up in a divided government, usually around, on average since 1928, it's gone up about 11%, right? Now, and when you've had recessions, it's gone up, you know, a little. If you exclude recessions, it's gone up about 12. But you see a high single-digit, low double-digit market. So if you were to think about just on that data alone, excluding everything else, you would say, oh, okay, fine. We look at a market that has the potential to be higher at the end of the year than it is right now. And next year, that it's a high single-digit, low double-digit market, based on what we see on this indicator. And quite frankly, it's very interesting. If you look at the data, it doesn't matter which party's in power. It doesn't matter whether it's Republicans or Democrats, whether it's Obama or Trump or anything else. Gridlock is good, but the average annual return under Democrats is over 13%, between 13 and 14%. The average annual return on Republicans is between 13 and 14%. So we spent $16 billion on an election that only changed the House by a couple of seats, right? And in the end, it really doesn't matter who wins one way or the other. So I find that data very, very interesting, but also very positive as we look forward. Most important thing about the election, ladies and gentlemen, is it's over.
All right. So based on that, so our expectations right now is the Federal Reserve on December 14th and this is what the market is expecting as well, a 50 basis point increase, and then February, potentially, depending what the CPI does, either 50 or 25. But the end is, we're getting closer to the end, which is why, what are we doing now in the portfolios, Dryden, to, you know, everything we talked about, what are the changes, what are some things in general that we're doing for more of the growth and income portfolios. Remember, if you have aggressive growth or growth, those tend to be fully invested and they tend to be more longer term and they tend to ride the market down and up a lot more. But for more the core type of portfolios that you have, like a growth and income, more of a 70-30 type of portfolio, what are some of the changes that we're doing there?
Sure. For most of this year, we have increased and held larger than normal positions of cash in those portfolios. What you can look forward to now is we're beginning to deploy that two different ways. we're now that we're closer to the time where interest rates may be reaching their peak as we kind of pause, right? So and that means that you can now get a decent interest rate. We haven't had 4% two-year treasury over 4% in 15 years. So you've got something you hadn't had in a long time. And so now we're looking at a two-year treasury paying between 4.3 and 4.4. And that's good news. We can put money to work there. And it's a good risk profile. And that's where we can put some of your cash to work. And
also
then
because the bonds have actually, if you look at the long-term bonds, they're down 15%.
Yeah,
right. So getting out of bonds and to the longer term bonds and going into some of these higher yielding is a big change.
So here's the thing. A couple of people throughout the last several months have been going, why are you holding so much cash? You've got 20% cash in my account. And well, because it's not the right time to do anything with it other than have cash. Well, now the point of the matter is yeah, interest rates are high enough that we can begin to put some of that cash to work. Had we had it in bonds at the beginning of the year, you'd be down about 16% on that money, right? So that cash was the best place to be with that fixed income allocation. That's what we did. Now we're able to grab some yield on that. And that's what we're going to do. So you're going to begin to see the placement of some of the cash in the accounts that's allocated to fixed income into more interest-bearing vehicles. That's important as we reposition fixed income. The other thing that we're going to be doing is we're going to dollar cost average into some equity positions that we believe are well positioned to weather the storms or the rough waters that may occur in 2023, right? So it's a different type of portfolio. You're looking for companies that are able to do well in an inflationary environment, right? Where their customer base is strong enough or customers will move to them or buy from them because you're in a high inflationary environment. Companies that can continue to raise their prices, maintain their margins. We want to stay away from companies that could be in a situation where margins could be heavily constricted or definitely change as we get into the latter part of the year. So whatever positionings you see in your portfolio between now and the end of the year, we're going to be positioning for what we think 2023 is going to look like. And that brings us to the last thing that we're doing, tax loss harvesting. This is very important. Layla says all the time, it's not how much you make, it's how much you actually keep, right? And so we've got to manage around this. So you got to take these lemons that we've had this year and make a little bit of lemonade. And so what you're going to see in the portfolios is we'll sell something that's down. These are for the taxable accounts. We'll sell something that's down, and then we'll reposition
like
specifically.
Like a semiconductor, right? Like one semiconductor out, putting into another one. Sell one UIT, buy another one.
Right. And
sell a bank, buy another bank. So you're still in the same sector that we like if it's in the portfolio. But so you're going to see things that even look the same, or like with the UITs where they're just a newer
issuance of the same security. Yep.
But that is okay to do that. It doesn't incur a 30-day rule because those holdings are different. Or one ETF into another. So you're going to see, because we think since we have this horrible market and these losses, we want to pocket those. We want to keep them, put them in our pocket while we have them, so that next year's when we have gains again, so forth, we're not causing the taxes. So we certainly going to want to make sure we're going to do our best not to create any gains. If we have them, we're going to take some losses there, and then next year, if we have extra losses, we're going to have those in our back pocket to use when we have gains. So we're just taking advantage of what the stock market gives us. But we're not sitting there just watching, keeping the losses go back up. We'll take them, get into another holding, and pocket those losses for future.
Yeah, so I just want to make it really clear, and Layla, maybe you can help clarify this for people, because when we sell at a loss, then we can reposition that money, right? And we take that loss, and we're using it to write off against other gains in the portfolios. And it doesn't matter whether they're long-term or short-term, correct? And so that's very significant. So we're able to better position things for the future by taking advantage of a little tax planning now.
Right. So one of the things I want to remind you of, you know, year-end is coming about fast, very, very fast. So if you are 70 and a half, okay, and you are report, and only if you're 70 and a half, you could take portion of your required minimum distributions and you could send it directly to charity, and that reduces your income because, you know, your standard deduction is so high. So when you give charitable contributions, you may not have enough to even deduct them. But if you are in a position where you are required to take money out of your retirement account and you are charitably oriented, we recommend that you give some of that required minimum directly to the charity so we can help you to do that. However, we have a timeline, a deadline. December 10th is like the last day if you want to make sure that we can process that. Also, if you have not done your required minimum, you know, we're in the process right now of going through all those accounts, and it is time to do so and do the right withholdings, and because time is around the corner here. Also, if you want to gift any stock to what we call a donor advice fund, it takes time to transfer those to a donor advice fund. So again, about the first week of December is the deadline to do so. If you plan to do any gifting, you certainly want to do that quickly. Also, if you want to establish any sort of retirement plan, or if you want to fund a 401k plan, that is definitely very time sensitive. Again, the first week of December is the last time that you could contribute or start up a plan to do that. And then if you want us to do more tax harvesting, if you have other gains outside the portfolio that we don't know about, and because we may harvest losses, but we may not harvest all of them, because we may want to keep a stock that we think if we get out of it, it may recover within those 30 days. So even though we're doing tax harvesting, but we're not maximizing all the losses that an account may have. Some we are, some we're not. But if we do have outside gains that we don't know about, you sold real estate, you sold something else, you need to contact us and let us know to maximize that your portfolio to that. So there's a lot of things that you should be looking at from there. One last question that we have from a client. If we buy a short-term fund, and you look at the yield of a short-term fund, with the yield they'll show on Morningstar or on the computer, it's going to show a yield that is really more of a 12-month yield, and it's not the current yield of these funds that they're paying. Most short-term funds right now are paying over 3%. So don't be fooled. Don't immediately look at a fund and say, why are they buying this fund that's only yielding 1%? It's really, that's a backward looking, because those things don't get updated like our systems do. So that was a question that one of the clients had, and I wanted to make sure and answer that. I know we're getting over here. So the last thing I want to say is that our next podcast is December 15th at 3:00, which is a Thursday. And want to wish everyone very, very happy Thanksgiving. We have a lot to be thankful for. I know we don't have a great market. We can't be thankful for that, but we are thankful that things are starting to look better, that we are safe. We're not in a war like Ukraine. We do have our family or friends around us, and we have a lot to be thankful for. We're a free country, and we're living the American dream. So, Dryden, do you have anything to add?
Just want to thank everybody as we get into the holiday season, and happy Thanksgiving. Take a few moments to spend some time with your family and be thankful for all the wonderful things that we do have and share at this time. So God bless everyone, and we look forward to seeing you again on December the 15th. Thank you.
Opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Historical performance is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. This information is not intended to be substitute for specific individualized tax advice. We suggest that you discuss your specific tax issues with a qualified tax advisor. The economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful. All investing involves risk, including loss of principal. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. All company names noted herein are for educational purposes only and not an indication of trading intent or a solicitation of their products or services. Layla Pence is a registered representative with and securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA/SIPC. Financial planning offered through Pence Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. Dryden Pence is a registered representative with and offers securities and advisory services through LPL Financial, LLC, LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIPC and a registered investment advisor. Mr. Pence may offer financial planning services through Pence Wealth Management, PWM, a registered investment advisor. Pence Wealth Management, PWM, is a financial services practice within LPL Financial LLC, LPL Financial, comprised of multiple financial professionals that provide a series of services including personal investment advisory, third-party managed advisory and brokerage services. Pence Wealth Management Incorporated is an investment advisor registered with the state of California to provide financial planning services. The financial professionals affiliated with PWM are registered with and offer securities and investment advisory services through LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIPC and a registered investment advisor. As of December 31, 2021, the total assets serviced by PWM through LPL Financial consist of over $1.95 billion in advisory and $383 million in brokerage assets. PWM and LPL Financial are separate.